7 out of 10 proctologists recommend listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Any show we can get away with playing a lot of Eagles, it's this show.
It's because Glenn has passed.
Right? Glenn is gone.
We did Bowie last week, so do fun.
Yeah. All right, it's time to move along to our next
song.
I'm sorry.
The whole riff.
Did you want to step over my intro some more?
Because I think it's important to mention this right now because it is the Eagles. It was an accidental song.
You're an accidental song.
Joe was in the corner practicing fingering exercises in that riff.
Right.
It was just a finger exercise. And everybody said, wait, stop, keep going. And then they turned into this lovely song. Back to you.
That tender moment brought to you by Tim the Tool. Michael Bennett, MD, and Sarah Bennett, they are the authors of F Feelings, One Shrink's Practical Advice for Managing All Life's Impossible Problems. When I saw an interview, I think I read an interview, maybe it was HuffPost or I don't know, Fox or something. No, it wasn't Fox because I don't watch Fox. I said I got to have these people. There's not a whole lot of spiritual content to this book, I don't think, but it doesn't matter. From my point of view, the people of faith need to read this book because there's a lot of, I don't know, it's almost like a practice of narcissism that's gone awry. There's a lot of navel-gazing in the faith community, and I think that's an oxymoron.
Big time.
If you're faith people, you need to be taking your nose out of your navel.
Yes.
Know what I'm saying? And so I asked the bosses here at the station, because, you know, it's Canada's largest faith-based station. I said, do you mind if I have these authors on the show with this book? Because it's got a bad word in the title. And they said, yeah, that's okay, but just, you know, make sure you're not an idiot about it. So I'm going to do my best not to be an idiot about this book.
Should I get the beat button ready?
No.
No, okay.
The only self-help book you'll ever need from a psychiatrist and his comedy writer daughter who will help you put aside your unrealistic wishes, stop trying to change things you can't change, and do the best with what you can control. The first steps to managing all of life's impossible problems. Here is the cut to the chase therapy session you've been looking for, ladies and gentlemen. Michael Bennett, MD, and Sarah Bennett. Sarah, do you have any letters after your name at all? Anything?
BFA, maybe?
Yes. Yes, okay. That'll work. What have you had, Michael, I want to go right to you first with this question. Have you had anybody in your profession push back, you know, any real smart people, any psychiatrists, any sort of Scott Peck types push back and say, oh, come on now, lighten up. You're just being cheeky. This is, you're making fun of serious stuff.
Well, actually, I thought maybe somebody would. It wasn't something I would have written when I was more working in academia. And I often joked to my sister that if the resistance was too strong or people felt I was being too unprofessional, I might be coming back to Canada. But so far, the response has been positive.
Good. And where are you from originally, sir?
I'm from Toronto.
But what part of Toronto?
Forest Hill.
Oh, okay.
Hey.
We know what you had in your lunchbox at school. A croissant.
And some Vachon, half moons.
Okay, stop it. Vachon cakes.
Oh, they're delicious.
Croissant and Vachon. And Sarah, what's it like having a dad like this? Seriously, let's just be honest. Pretend he's not on the phone.
Well, it's worth mentioning that my mother is also a psychiatrist.
Oh, man. No wonder you got into comedy. Good night.
Yeah, exactly. But it was funny because they both, when I was a kid, worked at, you know, a public mental hospital. And if you don't have a sense of humor when you're working with very, very crazy people, you usually find another job or another career. Yep. So there was a lot of laughter around the dinner table. and discussions of things to me that I thought they were making up. You know, and if you read the book or, you know, read the title, you know that he isn't someone who really wanted to hear about my dreams or my feelings or my thoughts. A lot of frank advice, a lot of eye rolling, a lot of don't give me that. You know that's not true if I ever started whining and complaining. So,
man.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have that assumption if your parents are psychiatrists, that they want you to lie down on a couch and start talking, and that definitely was not my upbringing at all.
No, but it's like hairdressers with bad hair, right? I mean, they do their stuff at work, and when they come home, they just don't care. And so I can imagine your dad coming home from work, your mom and dad coming home from work and just saying, we don't care about your problems, little girl. We just don't.
Exactly. We care about you doing your math homework.
Yes. Yeah. Do you have other siblings, or are you a princess?
Oh, no, I have an older sister who is a surgeon. So she got all of the sort of studying ability, and then, you know, I write fart jokes. So.
Yes!
Hey, yeah!
Yes! Hey, wait, can I tell you a joke? I learned this joke from an 8-year-old. You ready, Sarah?
Oh, sure, give me.
Okay. Why does a crack in your bum go... I have to do it this way in radio. Why does a crack in your bum go up and down instead of left to right?
Why?
Because if it went left to right, every time you went down a slide, it would go... An 8-year-old told me that.
I will call my 6-year-old nephew and share that shortly.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Now, can I call you Dr. Bennett? It just sounds more official. May I do that?
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Bennett. The first thing that I got to say is you remind me of Bob Newhart's sketch. And I'm sure you've heard this before. Stop it! Right? We're going to play that at the end of this interview with you. I don't know. Have you ever seen... Do you know what I'm talking about?
I love that sketch. Yes, I often quote it.
I can imagine.
He's my role model.
Yeah.
And Mel Brooks, Dr. Haldanish, who followed behind a patient and said, don't tear paper, don't tear paper.
Oh, man. I just had a Mel Brooks... Okay, we're going to get to the book here in a second, but I just had a Mel Brooks marathon the other day. I watched Spaceballs.
Blazing Saddles?
I watched Blazing Saddles, the most racist movie ever made.
History of the World?
And History of the World. Were you at my place?
No, because you and I have very similar brains.
Yeah, we have problems. Okay, let's get on with this book here. First of all, you know, aside from a hook title, right, F Feelings, One Shrink's Practical Advice for Managing All Life's Impossible Problems, there's got to be some substance to it, and there's got to be reason for that substance. So, Dr. Bennett, how do you concisely package together the reason for this book?
Well, the reason came from the way the title or something like it would often come up in first sessions with patients who really expected psychiatry and therapy to do more for them than it possibly could, and were kind of caught up in wishes and expectations, particularly about themselves, that were just impossible, and that trying to get people right away to think realistically, particularly about sources of pain that were not going to go away. It was often the dilemma of Job. Things that you couldn't help, that you didn't deserve, but they weren't going to get better. And finding that acceptance was the best way to go forward, because then you didn't blame yourself. You didn't expect yourself to control it. You could be much freer and more creative about what you could do with your burdens. That's sort of what it came down to. I found it was very much a part of conversations with patients that then became both funny and interesting and sad. And Sarah had an inspiration about a way to capture that and put it into a book. And I was extremely grateful to her for making that possible.
Okay, so, you know, we talk a lot on our show about a few things that I have found helpful over the years, and I would actually like your commentary, your straight-up commentary, as I know we can only get from you, Dr. Bennett, about these formulaic things. And I actually think these things, you know, these ones, of all the formulaic stuff out there for helping oneself discover oneself, I think these things have some substance, but I want you to push back and tell me if you think they're just a load of garbage. You ready?
Sure.
Okay, Boundaries by, is it Cloud and Townsend? Have you heard of the Boundaries series?
No, I haven't.
Okay, good. Let's move on. Love Languages by Gary Chapman.
Sarah?
See, We pride ourselves on having lots of opinions about self-help without ever reading any.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, hold on.
What I know about is I know a little bit about The Secret because I had friends that made collages for a while. But otherwise, you are blissfully ignorant. So.
Oh, my goodness. So funny. Okay, what about the Enneagram? Anybody? Oh. No?
That sounds, we're failing the exam here.
Yeah, that sounds like witchcraft.
What is the one thing that people come to the office with, Dr. Bennett, that you kind of tell them right away, just stop. Don't even tell me about the results. You know, they've done some test. They've read some book. Is it The Secret? Is it something else? Is it Anthony Robbins stuff? Is it? I mean, because we're talking about a society of narcissistic blame shifters. So what's the one thing you hear from the most when it comes to your patients whinging about life and then they read whatever?
Well, you know, most of the patients I see really have some painful issues. They're seldom self-indulgent. I mean, these days it's just so much trouble for them to, in an American system of managed care, so much trouble to go to see a psychiatrist. So that they're, you know... Also, I probably don't have a reputation for being a good guy to sit with and talk to for too long.
No, are you...
The way I sort of draw them forth is ask them sort of what their goal is and whether it's that they have a better relationship with their parents or they get over some grief or that they could control their depression. Whatever they say, there's usually a heavy element of wish and a lack of acceptance of the fact that they don't control it. So that my confrontation is not so much that they're being self-indulgent, just that they're being overly hopeful and that we have to get down to think about life as it really is.
Okay, Sarah, do you have children of your own or no?
No, just 4 very young nephews.
Okay.
Use me as a human jungle gym.
Right, okay. In your experience with children and these nephews, do you find that today's parenting, like I guess really we're talking about how your sister parents, she's not here, so let's talk about her. as far as parents these days, do they need the proverbial slap upside the collective head? Parenting, as far as parenting stuff goes these days? And I think you're a good person to speak to this. What say you, Sarah?
Well, I don't think my sister does, actually. But, you know, I live in New York a lot of the time, and I have a lot of friends who you could describe as Brooklyn parents. And a lot of the time, I mean, I've met parents, they're friends of friends, who will say things like, well, we don't like to tell Chrysanthemum or Beckett or Magnus or whatever their kid's name is.
How about Shaniqua?
Tell him no. He doesn't need to hear the word no. It's too negative.
Right.
Things like that where you worry about the next little generation of sociopaths. Or
yep.
A friend of mine was working on a documentary for kids, and evidently there's a certain movement to not use the word kids because it's deemed insulting.
Oh,
you need
brother.
To say young people. And to me, he said, you know, they don't want them to feel disempowered. And maybe I feel very old-fashioned, but I think it's useful to make kids feel disempowered. They don't have any power. They don't make any of the decisions. Parents are the boss. Sit down and shut up. Again, I don't have kids, but I do tell my nephews occasionally to sit down and shut up.
I love it. Okay, now, obviously, we're making light of, you know, this whole thing, and we're getting all Bob Newharty here, but, you know, there are people with legit problems, and I'm sure, Dr. Bennett, that you're not simply Newharting them left, right, and center, right? And we're referencing this, we're going to play this clip at the end of this interview, but you're not just sitting there making fun of their feelings, right? Otherwise, your practice is going to shut down.
No, it's not making fun of their feelings. It's just saying, even when your feelings are very legitimately sad, and I certainly see a lot of people with depression, anxiety disorder, and some schizophrenia, too, that whatever it is, you have to take a broader point of view. You often can't control feelings. Feelings are going to put a lot of really crazy negative thoughts in your head. So I'm a real believer that you have to step back and using sort of your own experience, your belief in right and wrong, readings that you think help you decide what's right and wrong, that that's just more important, and you can use that kind of knowledge to build yourself up, even when your inner voices are telling you that you suck.
Okay, I want to bring in a real live guinea pig. Tim.
Yes, sir.
Tim the Tool, my engineer, who happens to have a microphone,
uh-oh,
unfortunately, he has been clinically diagnosed with depression. True
yes,
story?
I have. True story.
Are you taking pills?
I am. Yes. Celexa.
Selective?
Celexa.
Celexa.
Yes.
Isn't that like a Viagra thing?
No, that's Cialis.
Oh, sorry.
Not that I know.
So, Tim.
Both of them leave me feeling pretty good.
If you got, if you, someone gave you this book.
Yes.
Hey, Tim, I hear you have depression. Here's a book, F Feelings. you know, do you feel hurt by this? Are you feeling tender and you want to be cuddled or spooned later or something, Tim?
Well, I mean, I've learned after being diagnosed with it that, you know, depression isn't just about feeling happy or sad. I think I would probably enjoy reading this book just from the title, because you and I share a similar sense of humor.
Right.
And approach to, you know, demystifying those things that are, you know, held sacred. But I personally would be interested in it, and I don't think I would be offended by it.
So, Dr. Bennett, how is a book like this going to help a sad man here?
It would help fend off the people who say, gee, you should get help, and it'll make you feel better. The fact is, depression comes and goes. Treatments are very incomplete. You have to try them a lot and see what works for you, and very often when they do work, they only work partly. So it helps you deal with depression as a chronic condition that you need to manage, but you need to have moderate expectations of. Getting to the root of it is often not possible. It's just one of those things. It has its advantages. People with depression are often particularly creative or good at connecting with others. It's probably a genetic condition that has its advantages for survival as well as causing a lot of pain. The point of view there is that you need to get over a lot of your expectations to begin with, so you don't blame yourself.
So really, this
with depression, it's worth realizing that those feelings that you have are sometimes just feelings. You know, they're not coming from a logical reaction to a tragedy or to heartbreak. They're coming from bad chemistry in your head. And so when you have depressive thoughts that tell you you're useless, you shouldn't bother getting out of bed, you can say, F that, I'm not useless. I can think of things I've done that prove I'm a good father, I'm a good friend. I'm not going to listen to these thoughts that are not logical, that are coming from a disease. So it's an important motto to have, especially if you deal with anxiety or depression, to not listen to what anxiety and depression are telling you.
Right. So what I just heard you say there was, you know, this book is really about expectation management.
Very true. It could be 101 ways to apply the serenity prayer to your problems.
Interesting. Okay, so now you just cracked open the God stuff here, because the serenity prayer has a higher power thing going in it. Do you have to really believe in a higher power for the serenity prayer to work? What do you think, Doc?
I think the big deal is just knowing that higher power isn't you.
Nice. Well said. Well said. Yeah, because I remember, I used to be a certaintist, a Christian certaintist. I was certain about everything, and I was an evangelical happy clappy or whatever. And I remember people telling me that they serenity prayer, but they didn't believe in a God. I said, well, what do you surrender to higher power? What's your higher power? And people said, well, I just pick an inanimate object in the room that I'm praying, and I surrender to it. And I just, like, my head just exploded. Really, your higher power is a Kleenex box in the room? I don't get that. but that's back when I was sure that everything I knew was right. So expectation management. So as far as our guinea pig here, Tim the Tool, Tim, if you just lowered your expectations, realize that this isn't... Now, hold on. I just thought of something. This is going to go against a lot of people of faith, because people of faith believe that God is going to heal them of this eventually. What do you think?
I don't think that's true. I mean, other people might think it, but I personally don't think it's
true.
Well,
then God's not going to do it because you don't think it's true.
Well, God can do what he wants. Because besides, he's a tissue box, so it doesn't matter.
Right.
When I think, like, lower your expectations can sound like a bad thing, but I definitely believe that's sort of an approach to it. But also being able to distance yourself, maybe that's a different way of looking at it. Like understanding that it's not me necessarily. It's not the fact that I'm a horrible person that everybody thinks I'm an idiot. It's well, it could be true, but there are chemical imbalances going on, and you can actually take a bit of a reality check. And I don't know if that's lower expectations or taking a step back, or you know, but that kind of thing definitely helped me in the first stages and the understanding that it wasn't just me.
Okay, so this is a book about expectation management. This is a book written by a shrink and his daughter, comedy writer daughter, who you know, they take this whole world of blame shift that we live in. And it is a sort of a Shiva cosmic 2x4 upside the head to sort of say to people, first of all, stop blaming others. Second of all, get your expectations in line. And third of all, grow up a little bit. Because I think I relate back to my dad's generation. My dad's 83 now, I think. Dad, if you're listening and I'm wrong, don't spank me. And I think about that generation, and they did not go around to the local bookstore every week to try to find a book to help them with their X or help them with their Y or help them with their Z, as we say in Canada. So, you know, but also what came of that generation was a lot of carpet sweeping. They lifted up stuff and swept it under. So which is worser, Dr. Bennett? Carpet sweeping? That's a real word, by the way. Carpet sweeping or the other one?
Helicopter parenting.
Yeah, or helicopter parenting.
Well, we think carpet sweeping is an excellent thing to do when there's nothing better you can do. You know, there's some situations you can't make better. The self-help books say, gee, if you share it and you're more open about it, you'll live longer and your problems will improve. And we think that's very often ridiculous. The opposite happens. There are a lot of situations you open your mouth, you talk about how you feel, you make it better for yourself, you make it worse for yourself and other people. You have to have a way to suck it up. I mean, like Upper Canada, we believe in the stiff upper lip.
Yep, yep, that's it, the leftover British stuff.
And we also believe that you got to respect yourself. I mean, when you're carrying some pain like that, and you have to, and you know you have to. There isn't any way of letting it out that's going to do any good. We think you deserve extra respect, that the best respect shouldn't go to the person who's lucky and happy. It should go to the person who's carrying a burden that has meaning and is undeserved, but they're doing their best with it, and they're trying to be decent every day and get through, even though they're hurting. I think that's the message in a lot of the parables. I think it just makes sense.
Wow. All right. Well, finishing up here, boy, I love talking to you guys. We could keep going, but we can't. Sarah, did you help your dad lighten up this book? Like, if your dad just wrote this book, would I buy it?
You would get very far through it. The problem is that my dad is, you know, I did some writing in college, but being a doctor kind of beat that out of him. Everything now that he writes is like a medical chart. It's very brusque, it's just the facts.
Yeah.
But when he talks to patients, he's very funny. You know, he likes to point to the sign I think my mother bought him that says, "Thou shalt not whine," to sort of passive-aggressively tap it with a pen. Or say, "You know why I know I'm right and you're wrong? Because I went to Harvard."
Right.
And if he puts that in a book without making clear that he's joking, you would read the book and say, "This guy's a huge jerk," and throw it against the wall and never pick it up again.
Yeah.
So I just help him keep the funny intact because it's there. But unless you know he's being funny and not just being a massive jerk, you just think he's a massive jerk.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how we work together. That's my main contribution.
And this is how we work together, Tim. I mean, you have to consistently explain to our listeners that I'm not a jerk.
Yeah. And, I mean, since I've met you, I've lowered my expectations.
Shut up! All right. Well, listen, I want to say this. This, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the greatest self-help books I've ever come across. And I interview people all the time on this stuff. And I love this book. I love your material. I love the cheek. I love the brevity. I love the conclusions. I love the substantive directions that you give. This is a very practical and yet still caring book. You're not brushing aside people's feelings, but you are helping people deal with things in a much healthier way. Like, I would rather go to one of your seminars, Dr. Bennett, than Anthony Robbins any day of the week. You know what I mean? Well, first of all, it'll probably be cheaper, I would imagine.
That's true.
Yeah.
Do you have as nice teeth as Anthony?
Anthony's got nice teeth.
Very nice.
Tony's got nice teeth.
My father has a very impressive mustache, though, so that could be distracting.
Nice.
Nice.
Hey, do you have a let's see if he really is Canadian. Dr. Bennett, is your mustache like Lanny McDonald's?
I'm an old Canadian. Who would have had a mustache way back when? I don't know.
Yeah. Did we have a prime minister with a mustache? We had that one female prime minister once.
I don't think that.
I used to be able to shake my head like Diefenbaker.
Oh, nice! Nice! Like your jowls swinging from one side to the other, like a big dog with gob hanging out of your mouth.
Like, well, I see him and Nixon go head-to-head.
Yes. Guys, thank you very much for joining us. I want to give the website out here. It's fxckfeelings.com. And if you're sensitive, if you're a Baptist, if you homeschool, this might not be the book for you. But if you're a listener of our show, this is exactly the book for you. True story. Sarah, Dr. Bennett, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having us. This is great.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
I like those guys. That was fun for me. We're going to play that Newhart clip right now. This is basically the Dr. Bennett formula of shrinking.
I have this fear of.
This is a patient sitting in the office with Bob Newhart. Bob Newhart is the psychiatrist.
I start thinking about being buried alive, and I begin to panic.
Has anyone ever tried to bury you alive in a box?
No, but. Truly thinking about it does make my life horrible. I mean, I can't go through tunnels or be in an elevator or in a house, anything boxy.
So what you're saying is you're claustrophobic.
Yes, that's it.
All right, well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. Most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, here they are.
Stop it!
I'm sorry?
Stop it!
Stop it?
Yes. S-T-O-P, new word, I-T.
So, what are you saying?
You know, it's funny. I say two simple words, and I cannot tell you the amount of people who say exactly the same thing you're saying. I mean, this, you know, this is not Yiddish, Catherine. This is English. Stop it.
So, I should just stop it.
There you go. I mean, you don't want to go through life being scared of being buried alive in a box, do you? I mean, that sounds frightening.
It is.
Then stop.